Brilliance Audio presents Prognosis, a memoir of my brain by Sarah Valance, performed by Kat Gould. One, accidents will happen. Death is stalking me. She finds me on a sheep farm in Crookwell, a 3-hour drive inland from Sydney. I have come to visit my friend Tim and his wife, Belinda, and to see Tim's new quad bike. I'm travelling with my closest companions, George and Bess, city slicker dogs who love nothing more than to pretend they belong in the country, riding around in flatbed trucks, tearing after stray sheep, hanging with the farm dogs who see right through them and sniff them with scorn. It is a sweltering day in early January 1995, during the peak of the Australian summer. The sun has leached the colour from the grass and torn open the earth below. The weather is ripe for bushfires. Tim and I met when we worked in corrections. I was Tim's boss. We spent our days visiting every prison in New South Wales. Tim was my bodyguard, the one shoving aside inmates who rubbed themselves against me as we walked through the prison kitchens and dining areas. After we'd been friends for a couple of years, Tim told me that his mother was doing time in Malawa prison for fraud. She had done something dodgy with the accounts at one of his father's car dealerships. Tim felt funny visiting her, he said. The staff knew him as the policy advisor to the Minister for Corrections, yet his mother was locked up inside. Tim's bike is red and black, with monstrous tyres, and looks either like a lot of fun or a death trap. "Be careful, you two," Belinda shouts from the porch as Tim revs up the engine. She knows trouble follows Tim and me wherever we go. We unleash each other's inner lunatic. "Don't worry," Tim yells back and blows Belinda a kiss. I hop on the back and let Tim drive me around the fields before demanding that it's my turn to drive. He lifts himself off, stands to one side, and tells me to drive up the side of the mountain. I do as I'm told, Tim running behind me, trying to keep pace with his new toy. Near the top, I grow bored and decide to change course, turning a sharp left. "No," Tim shouts, appearing out of nowhere, hurling himself at the side of the bike to keep it upright and stop it from rolling down the side of the mountain, with me on top. "You can only go up or down a mountain. Go sideways and you'll roll." "Calm down. I'm fine." He holds the bike in place while I dismount, and as soon as I am standing, he folds himself onto a rock, his head in his hands. "It nearly killed you," he says. Waiting for Tim to get up, I ponder what it would be like to be crushed by a rolling quad bike. It scares me less than it should. Nearly 2 years have passed since my father died from bowel cancer. He was 64, and I was 29. I drank my way through the first weeks after his death, doing my best to forget I was alive. One particularly grim night, I lay on the road in the middle of Oxford Street, the drinking mecca of gay Sydney, arranging myself neatly inside the painted outline of a body where a pedestrian had been killed. Friends had to scoop me off the road just as the traffic lights changed. These days I try to distract myself with work, but grief still has me in a headlock. I seem to have lost the ability to make sense of the world. My grip on life feels fragile. I knew that a rolling quad bike would never kill me, even if I wanted it to. It couldn't. No matter what I did, no harm could visit me. I was protected by an invisible life-saving ring that I'd first become aware of as a child. It had allowed me to do things other kids couldn't, like lying face down on my skateboard and riding from the top of our steep hill, around a blind corner, and down another hill before rolling to a stop on a street in the next suburb. When the other kids tried it, they all wound up head first in the gutter, their arms and legs embedded with gravel. I was also a fast runner and a long jumper, which only fed my delusions of...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?